Hello and welcome to The Lineup, presented by True Blue LA, presented by, sponsored to be named later, Eric, Steven, you're here with me. How are you doing?
The Dodgers tied a game today when we're recording, so this I'm basically on cloud nine at this point.
Yeah. So I'm glad for you. We still how common are three inning saves in spring training? You haven't gone 2 for 2 yet.
So yeah,
not common, right? Because most
Well, first of all, like the longest. Oh, so I guess Julio Urias earlier in the week, he went 2 2/3. They haven't even had a 3-inning outing yet, let alone right. 3 innings. But I mean, obviously, later in the spring, I'm of the opinion that you should award saves for people who finish out a tie. So, like, a 3-inning save to finish out a tie is like the ultimate game for me. Like, imagine two pitchers preserving a tie for the final 3 innings. Two saves, one tie. That's like the best game in Major League history, in my opinion. So,
well, I'm sorry you didn't get that yet, but you know, and maybe you'll award the Eric save that actually happens in spring.
We should probably save 3-inning save talk for future episodes. I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point.
I'm sure we'll find a way to do that. We have some really sad news to go over, and I'm sure listeners have heard, but we'll go over all of that. Some other minor spring training notes. We've got trivia questions from Craig after this. Dodgers had kind of a confusing offseason, but a lot of what they did and didn't do really spoke to a trust and belief that Gavin Lux would be the guy at shortstop. So what a heartbreaking outcome that he tore his LCL, or excuse me, ACL, bruised his LCL in the second spring training game of the year.
Third? It was his second. So it was the third. It was the third game for the Dodgers, second for him.
I had just turned the game on. I'm sorry, Gav. It's my fault. I turned it on. And then a minute later, he got on base. And, you know, Rick Monday's like, oh, 2 for 3. I was like, yeah, see? He's looking great. This is going to be. There were doubters, and I believed, and at least another year off.
So here's what's weird about this. You texted me and said this is not how I want to win our like the shortstop playing time. But I was thinking back to that episode. I don't remember if us landing on. I think I may have guessed also that Miguel Rojas was going to lead the team in shortstop starts.
That was I recall us saying that was the case, but barely, and that Gavin Lux would still be a very regular fixture.
Exactly.
Mostly with the idea of not sure how. It was more speaking to how confident we were second base would be resolved, and that Rojas might fit his way into there.
Yeah, and so, and then also, but since then, this is so long ago that we did that, but. It was so defined to where the Dodgers have like came out and said, Gavin Lux is our shortstop.
Yep. No, and like, that happened and then, pretty shortly thereafter.
Right. Exactly.
And we felt as dumb-dumbs as we frequently do.
As is usually the case for us.
Just to be clear, that is not where my mind immediately went. I was trying to inject. So our listeners, I wasn't trying to inject levity into a really the look on his face was just heartbreaking.
It was a freak thing. I was looking. So it was a ground ball. He was running from second to third. It was the sixth inning. It was a ground ball. I was looking up. So it was the third baseman for the Padres. And I know everyone's going to default. Oh, it's Manny Machado. No, it wasn't. He started that game. He wasn't in by then. It was someone named Jansen White. Or Jansen Witte. Witte. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but. So he goes to throw to second, and he, you know, has like that sort of infielder sidearm thing, and like Gavin Lux instinctually, like he's like, "Oh, I have to duck." Right? I think he said the next day when he was asked about it, he's like, "In hindsight, I probably should have just taken that one off the face." The thing is, like, it wasn't even like a guarantee that the ball's going to hit him. I think it was just like, "Oh crap, he's like throwing at me." Basically, like it's in your field of vision, but he just got. Like sort of just off kilter a little bit. And then he like lost his balance, tried to regain his balance, and then the super unfortunate thing, like the literal first thing that hit was like his right foot with his leg at a weird angle, and then the knee, like, not supposed to bend that way, you know, like taking all the brunt of it, that sort of a thing. It just, and he immediately like crumpled, like crawled to third base, had to get carted off. You knew at that point, like, he couldn't put any weight on it, like getting onto the cart. And it, like, I know we like had to wait till like the next morning to get the actual results, but like basically at that point you're like, oh, this is long term. It's like, you know, if it's not the whole season, it's like several months of the season, that kind of a thing. You're like, oh, this is bad. And then it was, and it's a bummer, right? Like, because, you know, all the stuff we talked about, like Dodgers' confidence in him. There were stories about Gavin Lux gaining, like, you know, 15 pounds of muscle. Like, obviously, there's a lot of best shape of his life element to all this, but like, things were looking up for Gavin Lux, right? It was just a bummer,
very, for him. Yeah, like, his year, and like, really, I think has endeared himself to fans with just how, you know, has had three over the last, what I guess hard to say, reaching back all the way to Machado, but the shortstop has been a premier position for the Dodgers for a long time, and finally has a chance, and a very likable player. I really, really hoping, if there is the faintest silver lining, it's that if it were to happen, you would not happen early, kind of, just so, you know, there's a more realistic shot. He's ready to go in 2024, and I'm really, really rooting for it. Should he be able to come back? And, you know, the recovery time, my understanding, is around 9 months. Should he be able to really come back? What a story going into next year, and one I know we're all be rooting for.
I was looking up, like, you mentioned you had a good sort of intro to this where you mentioned, like, the Dodgers were sort of betting on Lux. They did that in a way last year, even though, like, Trey Turner was obviously the shortstop. But, like, when they traded A.J. Pollock, like, right before opening day, they're like, Gavin Lux is our guy. We need him to get playing time. This helps clear that way for him. And it, like, proved to be the right call. He was very good. Like, Lux sort of faded down the stretch because he was hurt.
But he, like, kind of, for a lot of the season, filled that kind of, like, Chris Taylor, the role Chris Taylor kind of always felt, with, like, kind of near the bottom of the lineup, but, like, consistent. Well, really, really consistent. Hitter,
yeah. Like, speed, good defense relatively. Like, and then this year was going to be a change because, obviously, back at his natural position, like, he had come into his own last year, so this was, like, going to be, like, a potential next step for him. Like, so it's just a huge bummer. Another thing about how it sort of I was reading, there's been reactions. Craig Goldstein had some good stuff at Baseball Prospectus. Joe Sheehan at his newsletter had a good sort of summary of this. I was reading Andy McCullough at the Athletic. He was in Dodgers camp for a couple days, and he wrote about it. And I think the way he put it, I don't have it in front of me, but it was like, Lux sort of was the, like, a key to the lineup. He sort of noticed that he said he balanced the lineup in a way, like, and it's not just like a left right thing, but also like just in, like, general, because now you're there. So we'll go through it, but like, the Dodgers now are like, basically, you're sort of, they're in like scramble mode or shuffling around, figuring out how to plug one hole while not creating another, like, that, you know, that sort of a thing, and how the pieces work and all that kind of stuff. So this is where it gets a little bit, I guess, could get interesting over the next month or probably longer, because who knows what they're going to do. But we did mention Miguel Rojas. It obviously, like, it puts more importance on his acquisition back in January, and then they extended him. So he's going to be the regular shortstop. Dave Roberts said as much this week. I believe he said Rojas was going to start like 70 to 75% of the time. Chris Taylor is going to take the other 20 to 25%. So, but that gets into the sort of moving pieces part of this, because Taylor was going to be like mostly outfield, left field, center field. Now you know, Taylor's going to end up being some shortstop, some left field.
And so a question for you, after those two, what's the depth chart?
Oh, at short?
Yeah.
it's interesting. So, I guess right now it's probably Yonny Hernandez, or I think it's pronounced Johnny Hernandez. It's a Y, but like, he's been filling in at second, third, and short, like, you know, in spring games and stuff. And he's on the 40 man, so I would imagine he is like the next in line to that, which is, I think we've probably talked about this on like every single episode the last 3 months about how the Dodgers like lack like experience depth on the 40 man, and now it's like it's really gonna expose that and or make them possibly, you know, get someone else. But like with the Rojas part of it, right, he's gonna take, that's what Rojas's role has been with the Marlins. Like, he was everyday shortstop, even if he doesn't go every day for the Dodgers. Like, he's at least used to it. It's not like he's being thrust into a new role, you know, in a way. But it feels like, to me, like, I thought the Dodgers might be able to get a little bit more out of him in a reduced role, in that he's better against lefties. Obviously, you don't have to restrict him to only lefties, because that's like, what, a third of the pitchers you face. So you're not fully like restricting him that way, but he's also coming off two like wrist and hand surgeries. He's been healthy enough to like play in spring training, so hasn't been much of a hindrance, but that's at least something to watch. It really sapped his power like the second half last year. That's one thing, like, he's not an average hitter, but he can be average-ish, like, if used in the right way, and, you know, mostly against lefties, that kind of a thing. But if he's gonna, he also has power, some power, but like, he completely lost the power with the wrist stuff last year. So he's sort of got to be healthy to do that. Rojas did drop out of the World Baseball Classic. That's another sort of element of this. He was looking forward to playing for Venezuela. He was like, it was a big deal to him, obviously. That was announced earlier Thursday. We're recording on Thursday. Rojas and the Dodgers sort of came to that call. He said he was staying in camp because he's the regular shortstop. He wants to work with Miguel Vargas and the other infielders, that sort of stuff. It's just going to be interesting to see how he responds to it, even though that's sort of his main role anyway. Like, I don't think it's much of a change for Rojas. It's just a matter of what they get out of Rojas. Now, Rojas, excellent defender, right? Like, that's what they're going to get. That's the one thing the Dodgers, if they're gaining anything in this, is that they're probably going to make out on the defensive end, which is good. But obviously they're not, they're losing offensively in this sort of exchange. With Taylor, we mentioned like how he fits in. Roberts said as much, I think, I don't remember which day it was, but that Taylor essentially is out of the center field mix now, just because of like how it shakes out. But he mentioned center field as being between Trace Thompson, Jason Hayward, and James Outman. That sort of brings us to the other point we mentioned, Yonny Hernandez. But before the injury to Lux, there were, there's 13 position players that are going to be on the active roster at all times. Or, like, you have to have at least that many, because you can't have more than 13 pitchers. Matt Karras at the LA Times even had a story this week about how with, like, Hayward, who's a non-roster invitee, it seems like he has the inside track at one of those roster spots. And it seemed like before the Lux injury that the roster was not fully set, but kind of set, you know, like in a way. And I just note, like, this is one of those, like Vince Scully used to say, if you want to make God smile, like, tell him your plans, that sort of a thing. If he was mostly in left and center field, the outfield, you had a five-person outfield with Taylor, Peralta, Mookie, Trace Thompson, and either Hayward or Outman, whichever one made the team. But now with Taylor more in the utility role, there's room for another position player on the roster. So it could be both Hayward and Outman, or like Yonny Hernandez, if they want to do more of a traditional bench type player, like he plays all over the infield. Because that's the other thing with this. I have a hard time imagining that Miguel Vargas is going to be like, you know, starting 150 games at second base, right? He's going to move around. He's going to probably play some DH, you know. I would imagine even like they might even have him at third occasionally, maybe in left, that sort of thing. But they're going to need other people to fill in at second, right? So who knows what they're going to do there. But so maybe it's Hernandez. But and then like if Hayward is on the team, does it make it less likely that Outman would be there to basically be more of a bench guy, or would they want him playing in AAA to keep playing at the ready, or just is it just good to have him as an option? Who knows? Like that, these are the questions that are going to be sort of answered, I guess, in the next 4 weeks. There's also the option of outside the organization. I think Craig Goldstein in his piece, I'll link to it in the show notes, his sort of main takeaway was that even if the Dodgers did go outside the organization, the options available, either the free agents available, like Jose Iglesias is one of them, or like players who might be available for trade, like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, either the teams might not want to trade some of these players, or, and even with the free agents, none of them are like an upgrade, like enough of an upgrade over Miguel Rojas to like justify the cost. So like at that point, what are you really adding? Doesn't really move the needle. So I don't know. Like it just seems there's a lot more question marks than there were, you know, before this week, before Lux got hurt.
When the Dodgers, the last time they kind of went through this was in 2018. And then there was the writing on the wall that Manny Machado would probably be available for trade. And sure. So I remember that link of Dodgers are going to trade for Manny Machado pretty early, like the trade happened in July. Early July. And
Seager's thing, surgery was April, I believe.
Yeah, I remember like that immediately, like, to some people where it was almost a when, not if kind of a thing.
Sure.
And I think that would be the case here, just because the Dodgers don't probably, you know, they ideally, that's both center field and shortstop, you have two spots of the lineup to where you could really fill a more consistent bat if it was out there, but it's not really out there.
Yeah.
Outside of, you know, perhaps the, if you want to pay through the nose for Brian Reynolds.
What, and then the other thing with him, like, is he really a center fielder? Like, there's that aspect
too. Yep.
However, you would probably sacrifice it if you're getting his offense or whatever.
Right.
Or let's say a random team in the Central, like, oh, I don't know, the Cubs. Let's say they're out of contention, but their center fielder is just killing it, and the Dodgers need a center fielder. Maybe they call and see if that's available. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. The other sort of intriguing part to me about like roster battles and that sort of stuff is the World Baseball Classic starts next week, and like we're recording this on a Thursday. I would imagine by Sunday or Monday, like pretty much all the World Baseball Classic bound players are going to be gone and going to their respective countries' camps because they're doing spring camp first, and then pool play starts next week. So with the Dodgers in the outfield, Mookie Betts, Trace Thompson, David Peralta, potentially like the three main starters, like if that's how it shakes out in the outfield, they're all going to be gone. So Outman's going to get a lot of time. You obviously Hayward is still around. You have the defense first non-roster guys, Bradley Zimmer and Steven Duggar. They'll probably play a bunch. Andy Páez and Johnny DeLuca are on the 40-man. They'll probably get a chance to at least make an impression for like, hey, don't forget us if you need someone to call up later in the year type of a thing. And then both catchers, Will Smith, Austin Barnes are going to be in the World Baseball Classic. So Diego Cartaya, he's going to get a bunch of playing time. I think Dave Roberts spelled it out last week or earlier in the week that he's going to basically catch every other day. And like, I don't know if it necessarily means starting. It might when the two catchers are gone, but he's going to also see time late in games. He's played in, I believe, two of the six games so far, one of them was a DH, one was a catcher. Neither one he started, but it's going to be interesting. Like, he's only played 62 games above or in high A. He's only 21. He's on the 40 man, but it's one of those where I don't know if he's going to play in the majors this year. He might, like, in an emergency situation, but yeah, it'll at the very least, it's going to be a great experience from him for him. But it's just a weird quirk. After all this talk about how are they going to, like, manage the roster, all of a sudden, look at all this free time in the outfield all these players are going to have, and catcher too. But it's not like there's a battle at catcher, but yeah, it's just going to be interesting.
Are you going to spring this year?
Nope. I'm homebound.
Well,
till the freeway series.
I'm going to pretend otherwise and ask. So as our man on the scene, Eric, what other notes do you have for us from spring training?
Now that you mention it, though, since we did recently come across information that a certain eating establishment in Phoenix is still open, which I did not think was the case, I'm more motivated. Like, I might just on a whim drive out there one day.
You should.
And I'll eat there, and then I'll be like, "What was I here for?" And then I'll drive home, and like, "Oh yeah, I was supposed to go to some games." So the another just awesome part of spring so far. Maybe my favorite part is, well, not the fact that Miguel Vargas has a hairline fracture in his pinky. That's bad. But, like, it's not hindering him to the point where he's out for a while. He's been able to do all the fielding drills and that sort of thing. They just don't want him swinging. It's been maybe, like, not quite 2 weeks since he's been sort of limited, at least with the bat. But they want him, because he's new at second, they want him to still play in games. So he's started 4 of the 6 games at second base in spring training so far. But they just say you cannot swing when you go to the plate. So he's batted 8 times, twice in each game. In each game, he's walked the first plate appearance and then struck out the next. It's like, how does this keep happening? My sort of theory on this is, first of all, it's spring training. Like, it's just wild. But, like, I don't think there's, like, this neon sign where every team's going, oh, this guy's not swinging. You know, I don't think that enters the mindset necessarily of pitchers, because they're not going to be – I guess they probably know on some level they know he's not going to swing. But I don't think their mind allows them to trust that fact that he's not going to swing. So, like, just,
and it's just not the point of spring training too, right? Like,
right,
you don't need to show that you can, you know, curve
exactly, yeah,
smooth 380 mile per hour change ups down the middle. You're trying to work on the competitive stuff.
Yeah, you might have thrown a pitch that looked like a strike, broke out of the zone, that would have probably got him to swing a lot of the time, but the fact that he's not swinging is like, you know, you get nothing out of it, because he's just taking everything. So, like, but I think it's just hilarious that, so he has a 500 on base percentage and all that. Other thing, sort of roster related, Daniel Hudson, he has right ankle tendonitis. He's a little behind in terms of getting ready, probably not going to be ready for opening day, but is still going to be ready at some point, like early in the season, Dave Roberts said Thursday. So he's coming off an ACL tear of his own from last June. That was his left leg. While rehabbing that, he sort of developed the right ankle tendonitis, and then that's what's been slowing him down. So, yeah, injuries suck, basically, is what I'm getting at. But besides Hudson, the only other pitchers on the 40-man who have yet to appear in a spring game, Alex Reyes, who they signed, used to be on the Cardinals. He's still recovering from shoulder surgery last year. He's probably not even going to be ready for a couple months anyway. So, like, I don't expect him to pitch at all this spring. But then Yancy Almonte and Victor Gonzalez in the bullpen have not pitched yet. Tony Gonsolin makes his first start Friday, the day after we record. Clayton Kershaw hasn't started yet, but he's been fine. Like, he threw a bullpen session earlier Thursday. I think part of it was he was just ahead of schedule in his, like, preparation, because he was going to pitch in the World Baseball Classic, but then a couple weeks ago that fell through because they have an insurance requirement that sort of, if he would have gotten hurt in the World Baseball Classic, who's liable for his salary, and because of his injury history, the premiums on him getting insurance are just teams wouldn't in or insurance companies wouldn't insure him and his $20 million salary. So it was a huge bummer that he another huge bummer of the spring, I guess, that he's not pitching in the WBC, but not yet pitched in a game yet. But I don't think that's any reason for concern just yet. That's kind of all the sort of loose camp notes I have from afar, I guess, as it were.
Well, maybe if you get those, you'll get the real scoop.
That's right.
I don't know what the real scoop is, but that's why I need you there.
Well, one thing I will be at is opening day, knock on wood, and probably starting at shortstop that day is Miguel Rojas. He started each of the last 5 years on opening day at shortstop for the Marlins. This year on opening day, he'll be 34 years and 34 days old. Since moving to Los Angeles, 7 different Dodgers, at least that old, have started at shortstop on opening day. How many can you name?
2. I will name those 2, and then Eric will name the other 5 after this. Eric wants me to name older shortstops.
That's right.
That started opening day for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Before we get into this, I will give you a hint.
Oh, good.
It's 7 shortstops.
That's not a hint. That's the question.
That's my hint. No, but 3 of them made multiple starts at advanced age. Multiple opening day starts for the Dodgers.
Okay.
It totaling 11 starts. So it's not like a long string here. One person made 3. One old shortstop made 3 opening day starts. 2 others made 2 each. So.
Bill Russell.
Bill Russell is one of the 2. One of the 2 people. In 1983 and 1984, he was 34 and 35.
Rafael Furcal?
Rafael Furcal was not.
Okay. Right around there, right?
Yeah, I want to say he was like maybe 32 in his last year.
Where is this age? 33, his last.
Yeah.
And when's his birthday? October? Okay. Yeah, all sorry. Right. All right. So that's now. Oh, I have one, I believe, that I'm cheating on. Spoiler alert, your questions are about shortstops.
And just as a, we did not plan this ahead of time. Yeah. It was a confluence of.
So, go ahead.
So before. I was going to amend the question because Chris Taylor is going to be like 32 years and 200 something days old. I almost made that the cutoff because it was like either one of those is going to start shortstop, but I just went with Rojas because it was a bigger number.
Craig's both questions and answers beforehand just to prep me and make sure I'm not spoiling anything for you, but he spoiled something for me in doing so. I believe Jimmy Rollins.
Jimmy Rollins is the last old shortstop to 2005. If you remember right, he hit a go-ahead 3-run home run in the 8th inning at 36 years, 130 days old. He's not the oldest, by the way.
Okay. Did Pee Wee make any starts in L.A.?
He made 1.
Age
39 years, 266 days old. The oldest opening day shortstop in Dodgers history, either any city.
Yeah,
the 1958, by the way.
Those transitional players, they all, right. You know, some didn't, some made a lot. Some, if you and I always forget which is which, so that's good. I know he was, you know, a rookie with the Dodgers, but I also know he was an older rookie, so I'm not. This is my last guess. Yep. No, I have 2 more guesses. Cesar Estrus.
No, they traded him in 08 for Greg Maddux too. So like, they sort of got out of that game. He was only 28 when 2006 they traded him. Wow, he was 26 when they traded him.
Wow,
he was young. Yeah, he was like
I had him. I thought 30, and I was. Yeah, I did not have him as 22 as a rookie. Wow,
yeah,
not on my radar. Go ahead.
As a hint, you were way on the right track when you mentioned old rookie as a potential guest.
Yeah. Oscar Robles?
God, no.
What?
I don't have it in front of me. There's no way he started on opening day in 05.
Okay, I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
He has the same birthday as me. Good for
like,
me.
Like actual like no, year no. two? Oh, just, that would have been amazing. Dead.
Jose Vizcaino.
No.
That's it. I'm tapping out.
Okay, if
Nope, no more hints. Just tell me tell me why I'm stupid.
The old rookie, who also was around for a while, even though he left and came back, Maury Wills, age 37 through 39 and from 1970 to 72, he was 70 days younger than Pee Wee Reese on opening day in terms of oldest opening day shortstop. You got Bill Russell. The one after Bill Russell, the one the most immediately after, was Greg. Dang it, we were just talking this with Mike Petriello. I wanted to say Greg Gagne, but it's Greg Gagne. He started 2 years in a row, 96, 97, at 34 and 35. 3 years later, the Dodgers turned to Kevin Elster in Montreal on opening day. He was 35 years, 244 days old. So I was looking up, and of course, I don't have this in the right spot, but the Dodger, he famously, Kevin Elster, he hit three home runs in the first game at Pac Bell Park in San Francisco, but that was a little less than a week after the opening day in Montreal. There was also in between Elster and Jimmy Rollins in 2007. Other Ramon Martinez started at shortstop. He was 34 years, 174 days old. Going back to Pee Wee Reese, he also, he did not start 1957. I'm not sure why on opening day, but he did start 53 through 56 from 34 to age 34 to age 37. Leo DeRocher back in Brooklyn, it was in 1940, was an old shortstop. I think you did okay. I was hoping you'd get Maury Wills, but
yeah, sorry,
that's all right.
That would have been me naming shortstop. Did not have a firm grip on ages. I'm shocked that I had in my head that Cesar Asturias was older when he came up because he's 22. Like complete bad fact got inserted in my brain. I don't know why. I get a return the favor, although I think one of these questions you're going to do really good on, because it's time for
questions from Craig.
Five questions from our friend Craig Manami. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Good, because I am not. Where did these answers go? Here we go. Hey, look. Hi, Eric and Jacob. Hope you both are well. Hi. Let's get to the questions. Gavin Lux will unfortunately not be in the opening day Dodger lineup this season. And the Dodgers will have another player making his first start at shortstop when the season starts. Using that as a starting point, this week's trivia is about LA Dodgers opening day starters.
All right.
Can Eric name the last four opening day Dodger shortstops to hit a home run to start their season?
Okay, so Jimmy Rollins is definitely one of those because I'm sure they didn't have more than three since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, and so this is home runs on opening day as a shortstop.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So I'm just trying to remember if Corey Seager did that. This is terrible. I will go backwards first just to sort of play this out. Rafael Furcal?
No.
Okay. This is not the best. Not feeling confident here. Hmm. Oh, wait. What about no, because he was hurt in 13. But he was back in 14. Let's go Hanley Ramirez.
Let's not. Bad idea. Okay.
All right. This is harder than I expected it to be. I don't know how I expected it to be. It's just difficult. let's say the problem is the Dodgers generally, like, Seager was stood out because, like, generally their shortstops don't hit home runs, like, in their history.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of grasping at stuff, which is a way for me to stall. And
so far you've just said Jimmy Rollins, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
I just want
you to note that the one exception to the home run hitting shortstops, haven't said that name yet.
So I just didn't guess it. But I don't remember him hitting one on opening day, but I'm going to say Corey Seager because of that.
Who did it twice?
Oh, wait. They had that 8 homer game against Arizona or something.
Yeah.
And he was in that. Yeah.
He also did it in 2017.
What? Yeah, sure. So
you say so, pal.
Do you have years for the? Is this cheating?
Yeah.
Like,
Corey Seager 2017. Jimmy Rollins was 2015. The last year you have is 2005.
Oh, so it's just one other person.
Yes.
Oh God. Oh, Jose Valentin.
Nope.
Wait a minute. Oh, he was at third. Wait, 2005, they started 12-2, and then I don't remember what happened after that. Oh my God. We were just Cesar Asturias.
There you go. Yeah. I was about to say, you may think this player was much older than he was.
He made the All-Star team that year. Wild. What a wild year.
Bill Russell leads all LA Dodger players with 11 starts at shortstop. Can Eric name the player who leads all Dodgers since Russell's last start in 1984?
This is opening day shortstop starts?
Yep.
Oh, boy. So, since 84. Okay, so I did close down the previous window, which was just old shortstops. But I'm going to mentally refer to that. Okay, so who has the most since then? So with Seager, he was 16-17. And then 18, but he got hurt at some point in April. I know he had those springs where he barely batted, and then he was, like, ready for the season. It has to be Seager, right?
It is Seager. 6 starts. You want to take a stab at the next in order?
Okay, so there's another. Okay. Is it Rafael Furcal?
With 5. You want to take a stab at the 2 players with 4 starts?
4. Good God. Okay, so when I just mentioned that they traded. So Cesar Asturias.
Nope.
Liar. okay. So Furcal is Asturias. Oof. God. Alfredo Griffin?
That's one.
And then going mentally thinking back to the other list, I don't even think. Oh, wait. Mark Grzelcyk.
No.
Greg Gagne.
Nope.
Okay. This is where it's difficult. So, huh. Since 84. Okay, so.
I'll give you.
Nope.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm going to give you one last guess. Sorry. I thought okay. I had a hint, but it's for a different question.
Okay. So this is difficult. So Griffin stretches it to like 91, maybe 92. Why am I so? And then Gagne was like, was he 97, 98? So I'm. Oh, Jose Offerman.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Maury will set the standard for Dodgers shortstop stealing bases. Can Eric name the last four opening day Dodgers shortstops to steal a base that day?
Come on. Rafael Furcal.
Did it in 2009.
So this, I don't even know if this is going to be a thing, and if it even satisfies this thing, but I'm going to go all the way back to Mariano Duncan, 1985.
Nope.
All right.
I'll give you years if you want them.
Not yet. Let's see. Shortstop stealing bags. Let's just go. I'm going to shot in the dark this one and go to Cesar Asturias.
Yep, in 2003.
Oh boy. There's two more.
Two more. You're missing the most recent and the fourth least recent.
The most recent Who was the other one, I guess, besides Asturias?
Furcal.
Okay. So I guess Seager?
Nope. You guess Rollins? Ron. It is Rollins. What an opening day for Jimmy Rollins. Wow. And then you're missing 1994.
94. Okay. Let's think here. They would have... Oh, man. I'm trying to remember the year. So that's probably Offerman.
It is Offerman.
Yeah.
Final question. I think you can do this. We've heard a lot of the same names.
Yeah.
Two Dodgers shortstops. Because of that, I'm only giving you two strikes on this question, by the way. Two Dodgers shortstops have had three multi-hit games on opening day since 2003. Can Eric name those two hitsmen?
Well, just going with the volume, I guess. Corey Seager and Rafael Furcal.
One of those is correct. Rafael Furcal did. Corey Seager did not.
Last and this guess. This is since 2003?
Correct.
Okay. And this is three multi-hit games at short.
Correct.
On opening day.
Correct.
Okay. Oh my God. So three of them. Since 2003?
Mm-hmm. Is Turris. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be.
I was letting you get there, pal.
Yeah. That was a Rube Goldberg puzzle.
A lot of same names there.
Yeah.
Rank the following, with one being the best. Okay. And four, meaning maybe the Dodgers need to make a deal. Offense, defense, starting pitching, and the bullpen.
Oh, so we're each one for each spot?
Yeah.
Wait.
So
four means strong... they have to make a deal?
Yeah.
Wait, okay, what do we got? Offense, defense, starting pitching, bullpen?
Yeah.
But defense, like, just like a weird... defense is one because that's like they're not getting like a linebacker, right? Like you can get a defense friendly player, but you're trading, it's a position player. So like, I miss chewing defense as a standalone. That's the one.
Okay.
I think offense, just by nature of it, even though I really mean position player, I think that's four. And then I actually like the bullpen. They have a bunch of guys who are like could contribute at some point, but like I think they're okay, like with how it is, sort like for the most part. So that's two, and then so starting pitching is probably three, even though I don't consider that like pressing at the moment. Like mm-hmm. four is position players, like. As soon as it becomes available, like, <Yeah. laughs> whereas pitching is like at some point, like, yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
I think I agree with your order.
Yeah.
Ozzy Albies said earlier this week that he thinks there are three players on his team that could be 40-40 at the end of the season.
I saw that
for the contest. Name how many 2020 players there will be in a Major League Baseball in 2023. As a comp, in 2022, there were 9 players with at least 2020.
Thank you, Craig. I was going to look that up.
2021, there were 10 at those levels.
Okay. I believe Trey Turner made it both years. So, 2020.
I'm writing mine down.
Oh, you're going to name them?
No. Or just, goodness gracious, no. Just my number.
Now, that would be a contest. All right. So, we had 10 in 2021. We had 9 in 2022. Like, I don't necessarily think we're going to get, like, people running buck wild because of the new pickoff rules. I think it's going to increase steals, though. So, I'm going to go with a lucky 13.
Can you see my 15? 15 is my guess. Those big bases are going to lead to some.
I forgot about that.
Stolen bases.
You're right. You went. You didn't price is right me because you didn't know my guess. But yep. You basically, yeah. You're
and that's why I write it down before you could accuse me. I didn't want you.
I would never. Yeah.
Yes, you would. Video games are becoming the basis of theme park attractions and movies. Please pick a favorite video game that you would love to ride at a theme park or amusement park. Do you know what video games are, Eric?
I've played Pong. The first thing that came to my mind was Baseball Stars when he said that, which was made in like 1986 or whatever. I have not played The Last of Us. I don't know. I know only because people keep talking about it. Roughly what it's about, but I also refuse to acknowledge mushroom slander, so I'm not gonna get involved in it. I am out of the video game scene. I wonder, you know, it's, and I don't even know if this is necessarily a video game. I guess it technically qualifies, but you know what would be funny is Rock Band. Like the game, the movie, like where it's like
just a Hard Day's Night.
Is it like where I don't you're know. Just like some there's some like it's almost like a karaoke type thing where but you end up like becoming a star because of it. Like I don't know, that's a weird thing. I don't even I have no frame of reference because I don't really play video games, so like
Noted.
Yeah. What about you?
When my brother and I were in a summer program, fifth grade ish, they put like maybe it was probably a little older, maybe seventh grade. There was a computer class where we got to do a multimedia pitch for an amusement park, and we picked Nintendo Park. We were visionaries, and it was like. Did you see the SNL bit on the like the Last of Us Mario Kart?
I did.
Like that, where it was like we had this really
great commercial.
Brooding start, and then it ended with "It's a me Mario." I'm pretty proud of my humor for that.
You
age.
Were decades ahead of the game.
In terms of, I think you know it's super simple, but I think Mario just fits. It just the color schemes, the sounds, the the mythos. You've just got a lot to kind of tap into for that. You could make it very interactive.
You have the potential of like, you're just like watching the movie of like the Mario Brothers, right, or whatever, and all of a sudden you hear dun, like that's essentially like the Star Wars opening, like. Yeah. It could be that once it becomes like a franchise or whatever. You know what I was thinking that would be a good video game to make into a movie? E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Everyone knows it as the video game, the famously popular video game.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we are actually picking amusement parks, not movies here.
Oh.
And E.T. also a well-known amusement park ride. So you're ahead of the curve there. Based on the Atari
video. Wait, game. So if it's an amusement, man, my head was way off. Yeah. So amusement park, can you make an amusement park ride out of Tecmo Super Bowl? That's my question. I don't even know.
Just sure, like a Tecmo Bow roller coaster. You're just going back and forth. You're doing loops,
or like you're trying to tackle Bo, or like you try to avoid being tackled by like animatronic things coming out trying to tackle you and stuff.
The game I play most days these days is Stardew Valley, which is a farming simulator. That doesn't really make for a good amusement park game. So,
wait, okay, so I know kids today, or maybe kids 5 years ago, played Minecraft a lot.
Still a lot of Minecraft being played.
So I want to go back to my early office days, and I want to make
play Minecraft instead of working.
No. Minesweeper, the amusement park ride, where you not only have to avoid the bombs, or the landmines, but you also have to identify where they are by placing like
by right clicking.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. I don't know how that's possible, but I mean, obviously, it would be fake landmines. But
I think I'm recalling correctly that Jacob is not a fan of soup. You are correct.
Yep.
Correct. It's been cold here in LA. Yes, Jacob, cold for LA. What is it, 50? So, what does Jacob like to eat? This is when you move to the Midwest, you lose a lot, but you gain the ability to be like smug about the weather.
Yep.
So what does Jacob like to eat to warm up, if not a bowl of hot chicken noodle soup? And Eric, have you made soup from scratch yet? Or do you even eat soup at home?
I love soup. I have on hand, I think I was cleaning out my cupboard last week, and I think I have 9 cans of like Progresso soup, like various varieties, like they're just like at the ready, like, you know, a quick meal type thing. I love that. I did the soups that I've made from scratch, and I'm not sure if you probably should count. I did make a split pea and ham in like December. That was okay. Here's fun fact about that. I have had, before I made it, I don't even know why I had the craving to make it. I had eaten split pea soup maybe once in my life before that. For some reason, I had a hankering to make it. And I had split pea soup for like 2 weeks after that because I made way too much. But I make a lot of like different kinds of chilies. And like depending on, I guess, how you classify that, I think that counts. I did. This was HelloFresh inspired, I guess. I used HelloFresh. I had a very brief dalliance with HelloFresh, and one of the things I got was a what was it? It was like a lemon dill chicken soup. That was really good. I'm counting that because you're making it from all the ingredients. It's not like you're just doing it. That ended up being really good. But yeah, I don't make a ton of soups. I would love to at some point do like chicken and dumplings, like with homemade dumplings, but I've never done the dumplings part. Mm-hmm. So I guess at some point I need to check that off the list. But To answer, to not to sort of butt in on your answer to Craig's question, it has been really cold in LA. But admittedly, as a Californian, I believe we are supposed to get, we have not gotten, had a high over, tomorrow is going to be, or no, actually, I'm sorry. We did get to 62 earlier Thursday. That was our first time reaching 60 in like a week and a half or 2 weeks.
Freezing.
Which is rare. No, it was like, look, it was cold. And look, it's going to get to 38 tonight. So like, you know, you get it. Yeah. It's cold. It's cold for us. So
yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine.
The vistas have been great. Like it actually, it, okay. Everyone's like, I think Angel Stadium, it quote unquote snowed, but it was only like in the technical sense where it came down for a second and nothing stuck. But like the mountains here are great. Like I was out today, like running a couple errands, and one of the streets I was driving on to go home, you're like heading due north, San Gabriel Mountains, clear shot right in front of me, and it's like perfectly like just covered in snow. It was so good, such a clear thing. It was pretty awesome. I do enjoy it, even though it's at times, I'll say it, way too cold. But this sure beats the stifling heat of the summertime, so I'm not going to complain too much.
My friend hosts a soup party every year. I sometimes go and, you know, don't participate. But sure. One of the rules of it is no chili, because he doesn't count chili as a soup. I think that's sure. Fair. I do love chili, though. Basically, yeah. When you start actually eating soup instead of, like, sipping soup, I'm more likely to like it. So some stews, chowder, seafood chowders, I like a good deal. And I would say on a cold day, Japanese, any curry, but Japanese curry specifically, I love chili, I love, and mac and cheese, I love. Those would be my go-tos.
So on the, oh man, I don't know why I got sidetracked. It was something about chili. I guess, so if you make a chili, I guess it's the meat part that like takes it away from soup for you, or is it the beans? Like,
I think it's a combination of it's thicker and it's also too ubiquitous. I think the rules in place to...
That's, yeah. I know what I was going to say. So I grew up not liking tomato soup. Mm. And now I love tomato soup. It's really good. And that is, I mean, it's as, you know, I guess it could be a thicker soup, but it's full soup. There's not, for the most part, that's the least chunky soup you can get. I mean, for the most part, like, no, I guess like clam chowders are right. But even that has chunks of stuff in it. Like for the most part, tomato soup doesn't, but the texture of that is the most soupy, I guess. But it, I don't know, I just enjoy soup. I think growing up, maybe I had the little kid palate of chicken noodle and, you know, that's it. But like, yeah, I love it. So once again, Craig has left us with, this is weird. I'm hungry now. You're just gonna be,
I mean,
like,
I mentioned Japanese curry and chili, so I,
yeah,
know, I
could, all right, eat. Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, I think we should do chili. I think we need to do a chili off on a podcast at some point this year. So
sure,
that'll be good. That'll be good for people to listen.
Good radio.
To us,
yeah,
us eating chili. well, that's it. Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back with, I believe, at least one other episode. This month? No, it's March. Yeah, and within like a week or two. I don't know what day it is or what it's truly baseball season when I don't know when it is. But yeah, we'll be back in like about 2 weeks or something, and we'll have more then. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you later.